And I have not had a chance to read these questions in detail. I've just flipped through them to get a feel for the kinds of questions you've asked. So I'm shooting from the lip. My answers are off the top of my head, which really isn't much worse than the bottom. But I want you to know that these are not considered answers in the sense of having thought through all of the ramifications. Furthermore, there are some of these questions that should be answered in person, and by that I mean not that I am threatened to deal with the subject, but obviously there are dynamics behind any question which involve the personal relationship of the situation. And so all I can do is prescribe a remedy as a doctor over the phone without seeing the patient. So I want you to understand that. And I would encourage some of you who have asked some of these questions to seek some more help in depth. I appreciate particularly the honesty of many of you in sharing what you really feel. This is highly commendable to me. And I only wish I had more time to sit down with you either on an individual or a group basis or even as a large group to spend more time dealing with the kinds of questions you have asked. So if you'll bear in mind that I'm not omniscient and that I cannot say everything even I would like to say about each of the questions, but I will try to direct something to them that may be helpful. And if you have further questions, feel free to ask. If a couple is considering marriage and there are doubts, yet they think the marriage is God's will, what do they do? Should there be absolutely no doubt, or is there always some uncertainty when first entering marriage? I would say that I have rarely found a couple that did not have some degree of doubt with respect to a marriage. And I'll tell you the type of person who has the greatest doubts. That's the person who has clear-cut standards. He's thought through his or her goals. He knows what he wants. He's probably been taught enough of the Word of God to give him some degree of sobriety and to recognize that he's not going into something that he can catch a fire escape if it doesn't work. And it's because of that sobriety, it's because of that realization that this is a final decision, that often your mind is filled with some degree of apprehension. But to me, there's a vast difference between a person who has the normal passing doubt and the person who has deep-seated anxiety. And I would say to any couple, if there is so high a level of doubt among you, either as a couple or individually, you would be much better to postpone the marriage in order to be certain. I do not think there has to be this final certainty of which this alludes, in the sense that, man, I couldn't possibly go wrong. I'm not sure that would be healthy, because then you are liable to come into your marriage an undependent person. And that's bad. You have to come into a marriage with the realization you are desperately dependent. And unless God works in this marriage, no matter how effective your choice, you won't make it. And I know this may be a little hard for you to choke down, but if you can identify with me on the basis of my own marriage, perhaps it'll be easier. We'll give a little orange juice with the castor oil. The wonderful realization for a person to come to grips with is you really are not smart enough to choose your partner. That's why you need to leave the choice with him. And he never makes a mistake. People ask me, Hendricks, let's face it, how in the world did you get this woman? To my closest friend. And I assure them every time, my friend, I really was not smart enough to make that choice. But I left the choice with him. And I'm here to tell you, friend, he doesn't make a mistake. And even though there are doubts and apprehensions, that may drive you further to your knees to realize your need is not partial, it's total, as you move into your marriage. What is a wife to do in being a helper to a husband whose time is monopolized in everything else? No time given to the word or prayer except preparation in or with groups. A leader of many, but his own personal relationship with God has no nourishment. Many years this pattern. He has never practiced personal devotion. Knows and tells others to do it. Here's another one that is closely related. What advice to a pastor's wife whose husband ministers to others but doesn't practice what he preaches? Never takes time for personal devotions or family devotions, and when away reads pornographic books, goes to filthy shows, even lies to his wife. Knows that as a believer he's forgiven past, present, and future, but it seems like a license for sin in this area of his thought life. Here are two very perceptive questions that hits at the heart of what I think is the greatest problem confronting anybody in vocational Christian work. And that is, you become like a tailor, taking the measurement of everyone else but not your own. And I think the greatest need for an individual like this is for God the Spirit to move as He will sovereignly in this person's life. Both of these individuals are headed for a rather severe crisis. Without the gift of prophecy, I can assure you. They are systematically kidding themselves that they are ministering to others, when, as a matter of fact, God is not in the process of ministering to them. Therefore, they are disqualified to have God minister through them. And I think that in this case, the first counsel I would give would be extremely strong, and that is, do not attempt to cram this down his throat. If a person is in this situation, he's covered over with guilt feelings. And your task is not to increase the level of his guilt. Your task is to help him find the way of forgiveness. May I share with you how God broke through to me in this area? I find it very easy to teach the Word of God. I've been well trained to teach it. God has given me the choicest opportunities by way of experience. But I want you to know, and since she's not here to embarrass, I know far more about the Word than my wife ever thought of knowing. But my wife knows far more of the reality of Jesus Christ in her life than I sometimes think I ever thought of experiencing. And I can remember particularly as a young man, because you tend to get enamored of yourself as a young man. You're God's gift to this generation. God gives you some degree of success, and that's worse. That goes to your head. I'm out here dispensing all of this truth and these answers, etc. More than one night, I stumbled over my wife in a bedroom where she was on her knees in prayer. My most vivid memories of my role as a father with my children very small is seeing my wife with a colicky baby over her lap and a New Testament open on the little kid's back while she's patting him and fellowshipping with Jesus Christ. And I say to you girls with all of the passion of my heart, if you ever get that kind of reality in your life, you will go more toward infecting your husband with the hunger for that kind of a relationship than all of your little sermons. And don't preach. You don't have a license for it. I think the greatest thing you can do is to help your husband by praying for him, by continuing to love him unconditionally. You see, what happens often in a case like this is that a girl comes to an erroneous conclusion. He's out of fellowship, therefore I don't love him. You have nothing in the scriptures to warrant that. At the time when he's out of fellowship is the time when he needs your love more than ever before. And you love him back into fellowship with Jesus Christ. And you support him where you can. And you encourage him when he even takes the slightest step in the direction of something spiritually significant. You strengthen his hand. You encourage him. Many times my wife has said to me, at times when I was too stupid to know the difference, "Sweetheart, I'd love to pray with you." I can remember times when I said, "Honey, I'm in no condition to pray." And hearing her say, "That's all right, dear, I understand. I'll pray for you. But when you want, I want you to know, I could consider nothing a greater privilege." What is the scriptural view of a married woman working outside the home? To be honest with you, I am not sure there is a scriptural view. Bear in mind that the scriptures were written in a historical cultural context when, for the most part, women did not work. They were not educated. And therefore, you cannot expect that the Word of God is going to speak in terms of modern culture. I think what you have to do in a problem like this is take principles and derive from them applications, and I'll try to do that in a moment. There has been quite a discussion about this in our home area. Several women feel that a woman cannot maintain an adequate home atmosphere, be a mother and a responsive wife, along with a job outside the home. Others say there are better wives and more complete individuals because of having a job. Now, I think this is a case in point where your danger is in universalizing. It's the danger of taking an experience and trying to make it a pattern for everyone. Again, let me relate it to my own experience, which is the only thing I have to draw from with any degree of validity. When we first began teaching at the seminary, it soon became evident that we were not sure how long we could afford the luxury of teaching in a Christian institution. I mean, it was a survival factor. We were 3 months behind in our salary. I had 3 children at the time. It was really rough. My wife and I prayed about it a great deal. And we believe that God led us to have her take a job temporarily to help us out of the situation. We have never been convinced that this was the best decision we made, though at the time, I must confess, we thought it was. And my wife worked for a period of time when our children were very young. But I discovered something in that process. I discovered that in working with children, the primary thing is not the amount of time you spend with a child, it's the quality of the relationship you have to the child. There are some mothers who spend all day with their children and are ruining them in the process. There are other women who are compelled to work and who come home at night and who do a fantastic job of building a wholesome, healthy relationship with their children and with their husband. So don't go out with some pontificate answer to say that it's always this, it's never that. I don't think anyone in this room would debate the fact that ideally, and certainly biblically, the primary responsibility of a woman is in her home, if she's married, to her children, to her husband. But there are often times when this has to be violated. My wife and I were compelled to violate it a second time. Up until just recently, about 2 months ago, my wife worked for a medical doctor, an otologist, as his receptionist. She did this for about 19 months. At one time, I had four children, either in college or in a private school. And I don't need to tell you that costs. And in order to pay the freight, we decided that she would work. It was a very happy situation, I might add. And God used this means of supplying the needs of helping my children go through college. The last statement is the one that intrigues me the most in this. Others say they're better wives or more complete individuals because of having a job. And I think I would have to say to that, if that is true, you have a deeper problem. I am not suggesting that a job outside of the home or some interest outside of the home does not provide real fulfillment. This is obviously true with many an individual. What I'm saying is, if you have to have that to get fulfillment, you've missed the calling of a mother, of a wife, and the ministry of a home. Thrilling thing to me is to travel across America and be in all kinds of homes and discover women who are wonderfully fulfilled by pouring all of their life creatively and constructively into their home and using their home as a basis of penetration in the community for Jesus Christ, and who seek opportunity for other ministries. Let me share something with you. It's just a little perspective. My wife is a journalist. She is professionally trained and experienced in this field with many articles and leading publications, etc. And she has tremendous gift and tremendous need for fulfillment. My wife caught the vision very early in our marriage that the primary task to which God called her was a ministry of building into the life of four children that God gave to our marriage and to a husband. And this she did with distinction. Now that my children are grown, the interesting thing is that every year goes by, her ministry increases. She has more opportunity for writing. We do a lot of teen counseling together, which I would greatly recommend to you as a couple. One of the finest forms of counseling I've ever engaged in. She has had speaking opportunities, such as she has this weekend with me in Colorado Springs. She is engaged in all kinds of ministries in the lives of the girls at the seminary, and she has an evangelistic ministry in our community. Now, the interesting thing is this. All through those years, God has given her fulfillment. But as she would testify, it's different in its kind. And it started in that home base, and then it began to enlarge. But never forget it. If you don't hack it at the home base, you'll never have a ministry outside. Friend, the women in your community could care less about what you have to offer if it doesn't work in your home. Because, friend, they're having a hard time putting it together. And they don't need your messing up a marriage to help them out. But if you establish a strong home base to begin with, then this God uses with leverage in your ministry outside of the home. And as I mentioned last night, never forget, one half of your marriage will be spent without children. And I think it's this time when God may enlarge the sphere of your ministry. How can a woman on crusade staff determine what kind of a woman she is? Responsibilities, priorities, etc. To find out how extensive a ministry she can effectively handle before God. May I just say a word in connection with this that I think is very much to the point? Will you please stop patterning your ministry after someone else and start spending your time saying, Lord, what will you have me to do? You see, there are some of you that can sustain a particular kind of ministry and do it very effectively in the will of God. And there are others, you could never do it. But we get this idea. Maybe we pick up some person that we admire and we say, man, that's what I want to be like. Well, that's nice, but you're not like that person. Perhaps in order for you to function effectively with your husband and your kind of husband who's different from hers, you have to spend a lot more time mending the shop. And the result is you better ask God to give you your kind of ministry rather than to establish some kind of a pattern. And what I say to a person is, sit down and ask yourself, what's your spiritual gift? What is your physical stamina? I never cease to be amazed at the drive of my wife. But I've learned also the hard way that there are many people who try to pattern their life after her who don't have her drive. With 7 pregnancies and all of the rest involved in her marriage, I can hardly remember a day when she was sick. We have some dear girls on our campus. My heart goes out to them. Man, they haven't had 1 pregnancy, and they are so sick, it's absolutely unreal. They are very weak individuals, physically. They just don't have the drive and the stamina. And for them to try to cut out some high-powered program of ministry is to shoot themselves out of the saddle for the ministry God has already given them. What I would say to you is you would be better to start with a much more restrictive ministry and then enlarge it as time goes on and God gives you more strength and more ability to pull it off. What I would say is if your ministry outside of your home is detrimental to your home, you have no choice. The ministry outside must go. That's your number one concern. And if I found that my kids were coming home and almost asking me, who am I? And I discovered there was an estrangement with a kid, or as one case I have right now with a kid just going into a shell. This kid was dumped into a bad nursery situation, and that kid is just withdrawing and withdrawing until he's almost shriveling. When I got to see him, he had had 1 meal in the last 16 meals. Kid is literally dying psychologically on a vine with a mother taking more and more home Bible classes. She's telling me about her ministry. I said, lady, you don't have a ministry. You stop kidding yourself. Your primary ministry is here. She said, you mean to tell me that I should give up these ministries of the word? I said, I would give them up day before yesterday. Your primary responsibility is to salvage a child who is in a process of psychological death. What is a woman's role supposed to be? Is there really a biblical basis for the kind of full-time ministry a single staff girl is supposed to conduct? Well, that's an interesting question. What is a woman's role supposed to be? And I take it that this is talking about a single girl, though I think it's obvious that if she is married, her primary role is to relate to her husband and to her children. If she is a single girl, then I think she should function as any man would function. And that is, she should determine her spiritual gift and move in the area where she can exercise it. Now, this does not mean that she's going to have necessarily the same kind of ministry. But you know, girls, one of my greatest needs right now, I kid you not, as a counselor, my greatest need is to find women to whom I can refer clients. I'm talking about a well-adjusted, happy, spirit-controlled woman. Who can help a woman? I can't identify with this. My wife is already covered over with more of a caseload she could possibly handle. And I got them lined up at the door. If I resigned at the seminary tomorrow and hung a shingle out, I'd spend all of my time in this kind of counseling. So desperate is the need. And women keep saying, well, what can I do? And I feel like saying, my friend, open your eyes. If you're willing to flow into the life of people, you will never lack for a ministry. And I think a single girl, let's say on a staff such as this, can have a profound ministry in the lives of young girls who are looking to them. They are drawing the water, and you become a behavioral model to those girls. They're going to watch you, every single thing you do, every attitude you express, every value you convey. They will pick up like that. Well, I've watched in Crusades ministry, even in the Dallas area, a few girls that God has given to that organization who've had a remarkable ministry. And I get most of this just secondhand. But the interesting thing is to see girls into whose lives they built. And I've often said to a young man, my friend, why don't you try a ministry like that? Here's what I call a ministry of significance. But you see, we get so enamored of this public kind of ministry that we've lost our perspective. You know, we get so carried away with a guy who comes up here on a platform and talks to 300, 400, 700 people, what have you. What I've discovered, some of the greatest ministry I sustained has not been from a platform like this. It's been on a one-to-one basis and sometimes in a small group. And I'll give you a suggestion for this kind of a ministry. I have a class at the seminary, which I am now offering every semester in order to multiply this kind of ministry. I only allow 10 guys to come into this class. It's a class in discipleship, where all we study is firsthand the life of Jesus Christ. I don't teach it. I'm just one of the group. I'm just a learner among learners. We agree on a passage we're going to study. One guy is assigned to give some kind of a direction to it by some questions to ask, gives us a little lead into it, and the rest of the time is spent in sharing. And you know, girls, I will see more changes in 4 months in the lives of these 10 men than I've seen in 4 years of my ministry in the life of any other individual. But you know what I'm trying to get now? My wife is in the process of lining me up a core of about 10 or 12 key women in the Dallas area who want to go for brokenness and who have committed themselves to make the investment to go through this type of a program in order that they might go out and get 10 women and start a disciple-making class. And I'll tell you, if you ever get infected with this, you'll wonder if you've ever had a ministry. When you see what God does in the life of a person. I was sharing with some of the men, it all got started a few years ago, and I came back off my sabbatical with 6 men who came and asked me to start this type of thing. And by the way, don't make that class easy to get into. Make it hard to get into. And I tell these guys, man, I'm going to rot your socks. Boy, I'm going to give you assignments, and I don't want you horsing around coming one day and at 5. So maybe you better think about it. Pray about it. Boy, by the time they come back, they're biting like crazy. We're ready to go. I said, okay, I'll see you next Tuesday morning at 5:30. 5:30? I thought you said you're ready to go. Well, we are. Well, that's when I'm ready to go. For 2 years, we've been meeting at 6:30, at 5:30, rather, every Tuesday morning with these 6 guys. As I told these men, if I die today, girls, I want you to know I will die a fulfilled man because of the ministry God has given me in the life of these 6 men. And I challenge you to rethink your whole concept of the ministry and this idea of some girl running, whoops, off the blank of a platform. Very indelicate. Single senior staff girls may seem to pose a threat to single staff men. Can't understand that, but and as a result, also may become unattractive socially. I think this is very well perceived. But girls, don't get hung up with what the effect or the reaction of a man is. You are not responsible primarily for his reaction. You are responsible for your action. And if this is what God calls you to do, friend, that's not your problem, that's his problem. And maybe God is going to use this to help him grow up. And there are an awful lot of men who've never grown up. And there are an awful lot of women who've never helped their sons to grow up. I hope you don't complicate that problem. And if you've got a child, a boy in your family, or God eventually gives you boys, I hope you feed them responsibility and you reverse the sad trend we got on the American scene, and that is of feminizing men and masculinizing women. And what you want to do is to get that boy and make a hero out of him. And you get on a first of his team, and you're out there yelling your head off at the track meet. Man, am I proud. He came in 17 out of 18. Boy, there's nothing like a kid. I know with my two boys, the highest thing in their life is to look up in the stands and see Mom. Boy, she's yelling her head off. The matter of becoming unattractive socially is another factor, and that is, it is my judgment that it is very difficult to mix a ministry and any socially involved situation. I want to speak about something that I'm concerned about. My kids and I have rapped about this by the hour, and I think we've come up with some things that we're satisfied with. You know, every now and then I find a guy going with a girl. And I say, how do you spend your time? Well, Brother Hendricks, we spend our time in prayer. And I come in and they're lying all over each other on the floor in prayer. You are systematically kidding yourself. They don't mix. They're not incompatible in the sense that it's wrong to pray or it's wrong to love. But friend, you better not mix them together or you'll lose all of your perspective both in prayer and in love. And I find that the same thing is true with respect to these staff involvements. And I realize that oftentimes God moves in sovereign ways. I don't even attempt to explain what he does in this area. And he doesn't have to give me any explanation. It is wonderful to see how he sovereignly brings people together. What I'm saying is, as an individual, I do not take the initiative of trying to mix these two. And if you are socially unattractive by virtue of your ministry, then that may be a part of the price of your ministry. But the truth is, it may make you far more maritally competent for the guy that God's got for you. May I give you just a clue from a masculine point of view? I understand there are quite a few single members here. One or two here in the crowd. I've got a good masculine word for you. The most repellent woman in all of the world is a marriage-hungry woman. A man absolutely does. The interesting thing is a girl wants to get married so badly that she'll never make it. At least the kind of guy she wants to get. And the interesting thing is, here's a gal out here. She's not all hung up with this. She's already made a commitment of that to the Lord, and she's throwing herself into her ministry. And from a masculine point of view, the girl is so attractive and so appealing that the kind of guy you really want is the kind of guy that's hooked on a girl like that. Besides, remember, the statistics are still on the other side of the fence. And some of you who think that now that you are 22 and not hooked are hung, just don't know where it's at. The happiest marriages in all of the world are girls who have waited longer and made a much better decision. The evidence is on your side, my gal, so don't get the unholy panic. How can we be sisters to staff brothers who never seek us out? You know, some of these questions make me wish I were in Dallas. Now, I don't know how to interpret this question. I'm sure it's a very legitimate one, and I take it, and I'll at least will assume this, that we're talking about not a marital relation, even prospectively, but we are talking just about a brother-sister relationship in Jesus Christ. I think in many cases you will discover that the person who appears to be most distant is the person who is most lonely. That's a part of his dodge, his cover. And that is, he's scared to death of getting involved on a personal basis. So he retreats behind this facade. And the interesting thing is, occasionally a girl comes along and with her inimitable way says, "Hi." She gets him involved in conversation, and she's smart enough to know that you don't talk, you ask questions. And she asks him questions. And man, before long, the guy is just open. And until finally, I've had a guy say to me, I said to this girl, "You know, I don't know what in the world I'm telling you this for. I haven't told anybody about this. I wonder why I'm telling you." He's paying you the highest compliment you've ever been paid. Or as two of our girls said to me after a session this past semester when I was going through a very difficult period in my life and ministry. He came up after one of the sessions I had with a wise and said, "Pra, feeling better, aren't you?" I said, "Man, I sure am." "We knew it. Six of us have covenanted to pray for you twice every day for the last 2 months." And I turn around and resent that like crazy, don't I? Man, I think to myself, boy, this is what it is to be in the body, in the family. And you know what I say to you? If you're in the family, girls, develop sensitivity. Not toward yourself, but toward others. And you pick up all of these signals of people who are hurting like crazy and who are dying for somebody who would just sit down and share with them for a while. Maybe encourage them by telling what the Lord has done in their life. I think it would be a fantastic thing if some of you girls, for example, would tell some guys who are probably covered over with their hang-ups how much their life and testimony has meant to you. That they have been a source of provoking you to good works. Nobody resents this. How can you fall back in love with your husband if you are married with children? It seems as though we are trapped with circumstances, time, lack of money, ministry, schedule, etc. Also, where do we start? We hardly even know what each other's interests are. No common interest. You know, whoever you are, young lady, who wrote this, thank you so much. The only difference between you and 100 other girls in this room is that you got the honesty to write it down. Because that's one of the major problems in this organization. And I'll tell you why. You see, this organization attracts achievement-oriented individuals. Go-go boys. Activists. Come on, let's get with it. Man, gotta finish it by 1980. Can't drag our drawers here. Get on with the thing. And the result is they get so wrapped up with that type of thing that after a while, the devil, who had him trapped in a fraternity house, shacking up with the girls, on his liquor and the rest of it, suddenly came to know Christ because somebody dared to come into his house and share the laws with him, started to grow in Christ, found out what it was to live a spirit-controlled life, was so committed that he devoted himself to this type of thing, and from now on it's broke. Now how would you as the devil to have been? You couldn't keep him from coming to Christ. You couldn't keep him from being filled with the Spirit. I got a better way. Just get him overactive. So that finally he can ruin himself physically, he can ruin himself maritally, he can ruin himself spiritually. What difference does it make? The devil does not care how he ruins your husband. And this is one of his most effective ways. And it's a hard one to deal with because let's face it, this guy is a very sincere person. And if you tell him, look, stop doing that,
He says, "Who? Seminary professor told me to cut it out." That's how liberalism gets started in the seminary. And girls, believe me, you're going to have to help your husband make some very gut-level decisions at this very point. I'll tell you where it'll come first. It'll come when your children start growing up and they begin to want to know, who is this guy that keeps showing up here occasionally? You see, girls, I don't lack for opportunities to minister. So in order for me to spend time with my children, my wife, I've got to carve out time. And a guy calls me up and says, "Hendricks, would you come over to our campus crusade? We got a fantastic college life meeting coming. We're going to have about 400 kids. We'd like you to share your faith with them." And I say, "Well, thanks a lot, but I'm sorry, I can't make it. Can't make it. How come? I'm going to stay home and play with my kids." "You what?" "I'm going to stay home and play with my kids." "You mean to tell me you're not going to come out and share the laws with them?" "No, I'm not coming out." And boy, most people have a hard time choking us down. You see, if I took all of the opportunities for ministry that were offered to me, you know where I'd be? Out of the ministry. And I'd be totally disqualified by virtue of the failure of my own home life. So you've got to control this to say, "No, we don't do this." Now, what I would say to a person like this who's asking a very legitimate question, where do we start, is to take something like we discussed last night and say, "Hun, why don't we sit down? Let's carve out maybe an afternoon, maybe just an hour we can get to do some evaluation, to ask some real honest questions. Now, how are we doing? What's strong? What's weak about our marriage?" Sometimes, of course, God can get through to a person from the outside. And the interesting thing is there's a delayed fuse to this. I had a couple come up to me after last night's session and say, "Sir, you'll never know the impact you made upon our marriage. In fact, we are only continuing in crusade because of what God did to us." I said, "When did this happen?" They said, "1 year ago it started, but just 2 months ago we got around to implementing it." You see, girls, you don't get spiritual. You don't get to the place where you want to go overnight. It's going to take time. And in this case, it's going to take a lot of patience, a lot of understanding on the part of this girl. And I would say that I would encourage her, if I were talking to him, I would reverse the role, to take the initiative to start flowing into the life of this guy to develop his interests, and hoping that God the Spirit will reverse the process. I think this trapping of circumstances is an absolute lethal factor in contemporary life. And I would encourage anyone here today to stop and evaluate not only your activity, but your accomplishment. And if my wife said to me, "Sweetheart, I love you like crazy and always will, no strings attached, but honey, I'm concerned that we're growing like this," I would say it would take a man who was pretty far out of fellowship to say, "Right, but I could care less." You see, it so happens that from a biblical point of view, the primary responsibility in this type of thing is on his shoulders to take the initiative. You see, he said you're to love your wife as Christ loved the church, that you might present her without spot and wrinkle. Your husband's going to have to present you before the Lord, and he's responsible. But if he's out of it, then the Lord may choose to work through you until he's brought around to the place where he takes his position of responsibility again. Any women I counsel with express a decline in positive emotional response toward their husbands, which usually results in a lack of physical response because they're not feeling romantic anymore.
Many times their prayers or time in the Word doesn't help them through this barrier. Maybe because some psychological, I'm not sure what the word is here, but is not needed. In other words, I take it as not being met. Have any ideas in terms of counseling this problem? I would say that this is a good illustration, girls, of a problem that is simply a symptom. The deeper problem is subsurface. And don't deal with the headache. See, no competent physician deals with a headache. I don't go to my doctor and say, boy, I got a fantastic headache. Oh, he says, that's great, Hendricks, let me write your prescription. Take this, you'll never have a headache again. So I take it, I never have a headache again. 2 weeks later, I'm dead. Did he solve my problem? Permanently. But, you know, I ask him, got anything for my headache? He says, look, have you ever had, you know, look, I don't want to give you my testimony. He goes all down a whole list of things. And discovers I got a malfunctioning liver. And he begins to treat this, and the headache goes, and the lower back pain is gone, and all the rest of the symptoms. I think the same thing is true with this. I think the greatest danger today, and the market is gutted with books. I don't know if it's ever occurred to you to have watched the bestseller list in the last 9-10 months, but in the last 9 or 10 months, 5 of the 10 books on the bestseller list our sex techniques book. See, this is saying something. I'll tell you what it's saying. It's saying that our marriages are dead. And when your marriage is dead, you run around like crazy to find some technique that'll bring this thing back to life. And some of them could not be more ridiculous. The truth of the matter is the problem is at a deeper level. You need to resurrect the marriage. And I would want to spend a great deal of time with this person in personal counsel and encourage them to seek it, to see if they cannot start to rebuild their marriage. And in terms of this last question, you know what I would say to a couple like this? You know what my advice to you would be? Very directive counsel. If I were in this situation, I would encourage you to drop out of Crusade. I would encourage you to drop out of anything. When I get a student like this, in a situation in seminary, I have often said to him, my friend, if it's that bad and you can't put it together, then you better get out of seminary. Drop out today. Well, he said, man, I flunked these courses. I said, I could care less. What in the world will the courses mean 20 years from now in terms of your marriage? You've got a deeper problem you've got to salvage, and you've got to get the priority system set up. And if I had a marriage that was that defective, then I'd say, friend, what's the point of carrying on this phony bit? We don't need to expose phoniness to this generation. They're covered over with it and repelled by it. The thing Crusade has to offer is reality. Is that true in your home? Is that true in your marriage? If not, then, friend, don't tell them what is not working in your own experience. I'd back off, and if necessary, I'd just take a leave of absence. And my wife and I'd go out, and we'd spend a week together. It's the most thrilling experience. Just before I left, my wife and I had been counseling with a couple. Oh, what a story. Take me the rest of the afternoon to tell you all the details. It's as sordid as you can imagine. Christian couple. Greatly used of the Lord through the year. Just kicked their marriage apart in the process of ministry. Until finally he said, if you want me to tell you, Dr. Hendricks, how I actually feel, I just feel zero. He said, I don't feel any different toward her than I feel toward that wall. Now, he said, I know I shouldn't be that way. So don't simply tell me what I ought to be. That's how I feel. I said, man, thanks for your honesty. And I turned to this woman. That's exactly where she is. I said, okay, we're going to work on a therapy. And to make a long story short, I sent this couple away to a little mountain retreat where they don't even have a radio. So they can't drown each other out with that. They don't have television. They don't have nothing but just a cabin. And two of them sat there by their own testimony for 2.5 hours and looked at each other.
until finally the Spirit of God began to break through, and this guy just fell at his wife's knees like a child. I told him, take a Bible along with you. I'm not asking you to sit down and read the thing, but when God begins to work in your life, friend, you better get it out. He's got something to say to you. And I gave him some suggested areas. And like little kids, mind you, these great big spiritual giants, they just started in a passage of Scripture, and they read a verse, and they talk about it. And they'd say, what's the Lord saying to us in terms of our marriage? Just before I left to come on this trip, my wife and I had them out to our home for dinner. I tell you, they were like two little kids just married. They were almost beside themselves. And as we went out the front door, they just threw their arms around the both of us and said, man, it would have been worth everything to see what God has done. Now, I say that that's worth the price they paid. They gave up a large slice of time. They couldn't afford it. In fact, three Christian couples pooled some money together to pay the plane fare in Christian love. I say, girls, that's worth it. And I say, if your marriage is in any way in jeopardy, friend, I don't care what the price is, you better pay it to get the thing back on the track. How do you get a husband to open up and discuss his work, etc., without making him feel like you're giving him the third degree when asking him about it? It's where a good can opener helps. I'll tell you a better way. Feed him a good meal. That's always good with a man. Get him very comfortable. Allow him to finish reading the sports page. That's very essential. And then say, honey, I'd love to hear what the Lord has been doing in your life. I'm sure that a lot of things have been happening. And at first he may say, well, yeah, all kinds of things are happening. God's working. It's wonderful. But that's phase one in the operation. And next day or two, you may even get intoxicated by having him say three sentences to you. Until over a period of time, you may discover that you've got Niagara Falls on your hand and you may have to shut him off. That's a part of that companionship feature. That's why I gave up a sport to walk with my wife. You know who taught me that? She did. See, we're back to that same thing. I didn't know that. I'm paid to preach. I didn't know about listening. Are you supposed to listen? Oh, hour after hour, I would see my wife with a kid walking through the front door, all excited about this thing that was happening. And she's down on the floor, and the kid's telling her what happened. And she's listening as if the greatest things in all of the world are being related. And they are. I remember vividly her throwing herself across the teenage bed as Judy was telling about my older daughter, Barb. Boy, the kid comes home, and you know about who jilted whom, all of the significant things that are happening. She'd throw herself across the bed and say, Bev, tell me what happened today. Do you see what happens to the average parent? Tell me what happened today. And you say, well, I'll tell you, boy, I started to talk to this guy, and he's not a... You're not a Christian, you know. You should not speak to young people who are not Christian. And she really opens up. And the same thing happens often with a wife. You know, you've been waiting all day, and it's been a long day, too, and a rough one. Everything in the book is broken down. And he walks through the front door, just beat. And the first thing you hit him with is the broken washing machine. I'd say your problem is your timing. How can a Christian wife,
I love this,
be a help to her Christian husband who admits he has a problem in showing affection? By the way, that is an outgrowth of this feminizing of men. That the average man in our culture is so scared to death to express affection that he's almost threatened in a marriage. And this is, by the way, why guys get inordinately involved in activity, so you don't have to go home and face this interpersonal stuff. And by the way, I'll tell you who the greatest culprits of this are, and they're often athletes. You know, this great, big, tough guy kind of approach, you know, here we are. But behind a bedroom door, they are as yellow as that girl's dress. How do I know? I have them in my office all the time. I have a guy who said, I'll take any three guys in the NFL on in the pit, and believe me, he does. But he said, when I go behind a closed door with my wife, I'm absolutely the most yellow man on earth. You know what my task was? To try to show him how to express affection to his wife. You know what I did? I said to him, what does your wife do that you like? Oh, all kinds of things. Well, name one. Well, for example, she's a good cook. Have you ever told her that? No. I said, okay, that's your first assignment. Oh, he said, I don't know if I could do that. Well, I said, you think the Lord has enough grace for that? Well, yeah, he was sure he did. I said, okay, let's pray about it. So we prayed. God had given enough grace. Well, you know God, he never fails. Man, he went home that day, and she knocked out a meal that wouldn't quit. Candles the works. And the old guy sat there and he said, well, Lord, here it is already. And he said, it was the saddest meal I ever had. Because I kept thinking, how in the world will I ever tell her? And he's praying all through the meal. Finally, he gets up at the end of the meal and he runs around. This guy's about 6 feet eight, about 280 pounds. His little girl's about, you know, so high. He moves around the other and he grabs her like this. I said, what happened? He said, she went as white as the sheet. I said, what'd you say then? He said, I said, honey, that was great. By the way, what would you do if your husband said that? I'm not trying to be bitter, but I am trying to be realistic. Some of you would say, is that the best way you can say it? That won't hack it. See, if a person is weak in an area, you encourage them. You don't dump on them. This guy, by the way, is something else. He came to know Christ, and he said, but the reason it was proof positive to him that this was a real thing was the fact that the Lord was beginning to deliver him from himself. And he has the little initials of love your wife as Christ has loved the church in his locker out at the cowboy base and has it right across the front of his garage. So he drives his car in. His wife can't figure what it is. She thinks it's a fraternity he belongs to. And then he stops and bows his head and prays that God will give him grace to do that. And I think you need to ask yourself, are you making it easier or harder for your husband to do that?